Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, April 2nd, 2018. The press secretary for South Sudan's vice president resigns.
I have come to the realization that I could not be useful to the people. I could not serve two masters. At the same time, I could not serve the government while also trying to serve the people without a big dose of hypocrisy.
And the Catholic Archbishop of Juba delivers a very strong Easter Sunday message.
The poor people, by cheating them through greed, lies, and other immoral practices. We are witnessing hunger, lack of good education, delay of monthly salaries.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. But we first go to South Africa for a breaking news. Winnie Madikizela Mandela died today at the age of 81 after a long illness. She was known as the mother of the new South Africa. Her status as an anti-apartheid heroine began to unravel as she proved to be an unwavering ideology. Winnie Mandela grew into a polarizing figure whose unapologetic tactics of rebellion grew to clash with her husband Nelson Mandela's drive for reconciliation, democracy, and peace. Those stark political differences eventually led to the couple's divorce in 1996. She continued to be a strong activist, but retained the support of only radical black nationalists. While her husband languished in prison for 27 years, she campaigned tirelessly for his release and for the rights of black South Africans. She was often detained and arrested by white authorities. Her popularity slipped as she refused to show remorse and abduction and murder carried out in her name. She also came under criticism for expensive tests and was further tainted by allegation of corruption and fraud. The press secretary of South Sudan's vice president resigned on Friday. David Mayen Dengdit says he left his job because he feels guilty serving in a government that is involved in what he calls blanket condemnation of the civilian population in parts of South Sudan. Mayen says he has witnessed destruction of villages along the Juba-Nimule Road by government's counter-insurgency campaign in eastern Equatoria and Ye River State. He says he had to quit because of his ethical beliefs.
Indeed, I came to realization that I could not serve the people of South Sudan from that capacity as the press secretary of South Sudan.
But you have been serving the people of South Sudan in that capacity for 10 years, Dengdit.
Well, I for 5 years, since Vice President His Excellency Waniga was appointed in place of Dr. Riak, 2013, up to last Friday. Those are 5 years. I've worked with him for a longer period of time. I was working with him when he was Speaker of Parliament. And I do appreciate his goodwill for the people of South Sudan, but I could not continue, John.
Why? I mean, the question is, why are you not continuing with your work? Why could you not continue?
I have come to a realization that I could not be useful to the people. I could not serve two masters at the same time. I could not serve the government while also trying to serve the people without a big dose of hypocrisy.
Let's talk about the hypocrisy. It's an interesting point here. Who is a hypocrite here?
I would be a hypocrite if I pretended to be serving too much. A government that is sending its people away, that is subjecting its people to different forms of suffering, and the same people that are victims of our government. So I could not do both things at the same time.
You traveled from Juba to the Ugandan capital, Kampala. What did you witness on the way? Did you travel by air or by road?
I traveled by road, by bus.
And what did you see along the road? I mean, how is the country looking like?
Well, the country is devastated, John. I can attest to you that if a population census is conducted tomorrow, the Madi tribe would not be counted because they are no longer in South Sudan. They have all been pushed to refugee camps in Uganda.
That's the Madi tribe found in eastern Equatorial State, correct?
Yes, along the Juba-Nimoli road. All the villages are empty. When peace came back to South Sudan, they had come back to settle in South Sudan. They built schools, they built churches, they built houses along the stretch of so many miles along the road, the Juba-Nimoli road. But they are no longer there.
Where did they go? I mean, who chased them away from their homes?
Well, it is obvious, John, that a skewed counterinsurgency strategy is now responsible for the civilian suffering in South Sudan, for the war crimes that have been committed against the civilian populations in Greater Equatoria, in Greater Upper Nile. It's a policy of blanket condemnation of civil populations, of villages. This is happening in Lanya. This is happening to Kakwa in Yei, Morobo. This is happening to the Kuku in Kajukeji.
We have put this question before to senior military officials in Juba, and we asked them who are sending the refugees away. I remember President Kiir spoke to a German journalist saying these people are chased by the social media. But you're telling me here it's a counter-insurgence. What's happening here?
Well, this is what the victims themselves are saying. I'm quoting the victims. I have not been a member of these forces that have gone to those areas, but when members of a National Dialogue Committee went to East Africa, this is the conclusion they came up with. All the refugees that are now in Uganda, about 1 million refugees in Uganda, refugees in Kenya and probably in Ethiopia, in Sudan, these are hundreds of thousands of civilians that have fled the country.
Dengdi, you're coming fresh from Juba. What is the economic situation of the country?
Well, there is a total meltdown. There is a complete collapse of the economy. People cannot make ends meet in Juba. We have street kids all over the town. We have beggars moving around, women and men begging.
That's David Mayen Dengdi, former press secretary of South Sudan's Vice President James Waniga. He spoke with me earlier today from Denver, Colorado. In the second part of this interview, which airs tomorrow, Mayen talks about the shape of South Sudan's economy and life in Juba Town. The Catholic Archbishop of South Sudan delivered a strong message to South Sudanese leaders on Sunday. Paulino Lukudu Loro says the greed of the leaders has plunged South Sudan into a continuous cycle of violence. He called on South Sudanese leaders to end the suffering of the people by signing a final peace deal. Michael Atit has more on the story for VOA from Juba.
St. Teresa Cathedral Choir in Juba sings Christian hymns during Easter Sunday Mass at Kator. It is the fifth Easter South Sudanese have celebrated since conflict erupted in December 2013. The Catholic Archbishop of the Archdiocese of Juba, Paulino Lukudu Loro, delivered a strong message to South Sudanese leaders during the Mass.
We all know the high level of injustice committed against the poor people by cheating them through greed, lies, and other immoral practices. We are witnessing hunger, lack of good education, delay of monthly salaries, no serious working going on in our offices, no electricity power and water in our towns, high corruption in public sectors, high prices of essential commodities,
The Archbishop says Christians should in fact be working for justice and trying to forgive one another. That, he says, is the fundamental teaching of Christianity.
It is from the risen Lord that we get the grace not to submit to the pride which fuels violence, greed, hatred, and war, but to courageously humble ourselves to ask pardon and peace from God, our Father, for true peace in South Sudan.
Lukudu says, for too long, South Sudanese have suffered from hunger and displacement due to the ongoing conflict. He says, the suffering of the poor should be brought to an end.
Let all the peace-loving people of South Sudan join their voices to call upon the risen Christ, the victor over death, to soften the hearts of the leaders of the government of the Republic of South Sudan and the opposition groups to seriously consider the felt need of the sufferings of the people of South Sudan for truth and lasting peace.
The third round of IGAD's High-Level Revitalization Forum is scheduled to begin on April 26th. But some South Sudanese say they have lost hope in the peace process. Victoria Akot, a Catholic nun working in Juba, says the leaders of the country are negotiating for their individual interests.
Let them look into the suffering of the people of South Sudan. But if they continue to look on the position whereby I want to be the president, I want to be this, we will never get this peace. The peace is failing because we are seeing the chairs are the most important.
Juba resident Jacob Chol says he has lost trust in IGAD's leadership in bringing peace to the country. He says peace will only prevail in South Sudan if its leaders agree to work together.
IGAD will never bring peace to this country. Except ourselves, South Sudanese, we can sit down and negotiate our own problem, because this problem is our problem. It's not the outsider problem. It's not IGAD problem or TRIKA problem. It's South Sudanese problem. Why we don't give us chance ourselves, South Sudanese? We sit in Juba and negotiate our own problem, and we bring our own peace.
Archbishop Lukudu reiterated his call on the warring parties to compromise over the remaining issues and end the violence once and for all in South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Kampala, where a former South Sudanese musician who is now a refugee in Uganda has gone into a different line of work to support his family. Stephen Wandu and his family have sell beaded bags, necklaces, earrings, and decorated with decoration. He says the business is helping his family. Gift Friday has more for VOA from Kampala.
Stephen Wandu, also known by his stage name Ambassador Coco, fled to Uganda in 2016 with his wife Monica and three children after fighting in Yambio between government forces and the Aero Boys intensified.
Life in Uganda became extremely hard. First of all, we had to go and register as urban refugees, expecting that we'll be able to get support from the existing humanitarian organizations around here. But unfortunately, the little support we get could not actually maintain us. We were unable to afford even food. We were eating one meal a day. Our kids were not studying because we could not access the support from the other organization.
Wandu says he wrote different projects and approached humanitarian organizations supporting refugees in Uganda about funding to start a new project, but received no support. He then sat down with his wife and created a business plan. He sent his wife for training on how to make beaded bags, necklaces, bangles and earrings at Hope of Children and Women Victim Center in Kampala with the help of the church. And by October of last year, Wandu says, they launched their business.
This business has really changed our life situation from worse at least to fair. For almost 2 years, our children were not able to go to school, but this year we have put them to school. They are all studying now. We are able to afford different food items that we couldn't afford. We are able also to pay our own rent.
Wandu says his business has employed four people who help them earn 1,800 shillings or about $50 a week. In a typical week, he receives about 70 orders worth about $1,300. Wandu, a graduate of public relations from UMI, says he uses Facebook and other social media to advertise his products locally before opening an online account with the shopping website Etsy under the name Animbwe Art Crafts World. He says most of his online customers are from South Sudan, Sudan and Malawi, while some others are from Norway, Australia and the US.
To South Sudan, we are selling the bags starting from 6,000 South Sudanese pounds. And to other African countries, we sell them at $40. These include posting charges from the post office to the various destinations around Africa. And abroad, we sell them at $65.
Monica Anboy, director of Anboy Arts and Craft World, says she wakes up early in the morning to make beaded baskets with the help from her husband. She says with the profits from their business, they're able to rent a two-bedroom house in Namasuba, a suburb of Kampala. Anboy encourages South Sudanese women refugees in Uganda to be creative.
Let us not sleep. We have to work hard to support our children and support our country. That is my message for them. We have to plan. What can we do in helping our people, our children, our family? When you are in a situation, don't just be there and cry. You have to think what you can do.
Anboy says she plans to take her skills to South Sudan, where she can train other women on how to earn a living and survive on their own. For VOA News, I'm Gift Friday in Kampala.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at the battle between African Union troops and the militant Al-Shabaab in Somalia. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
is there another African language you would like to learn, and why?
Swahili, because I know that's the language with the eastern part of Africa, and I have an intention to be there, especially in Kenya, so that I can be able to communicate well with them.
I want to learn Hausa because I like the way it sounds.
Ronyoro and Dusoga. They're just interesting me with the way they speak, their language. So I just get excited.
I like to learn the Yoruba because now we have our fellow Nigerians here in Ghana. They are everywhere and they speak their language, and I would love to understand whatever they say.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. African Union troops battled Al-Shabaab militant in Somalia for 4 hours yesterday during two separate attacks at rural bases. Ugandan forces led the battle against the militants and say they killed at least 30 of the attackers. The Ugandan military says 4 of its soldiers were killed and several others wounded. However, Al-Shabaab militants have said they killed more than 40 African Union troops. Today, journalist Catherine Nambi in Kampala spoke with Lieutenant Colonel Dio Akiki, the deputy spokesperson for the Ugandan Defense Forces, and has this.
The situation at the moment is calm in these areas as our forces continue to move around and make sure that there are no Al-Shabaab elements within our camp and that there is no any other injured soldier that could be under shrubs to ensure that everything is put on record. Otherwise, the attacker yesterday was an attacker that we expected from Al-Shabaab, since it has been their trend that attacks during Christmas and Easter seasons or Christian festivities are imminent. And we want to laud our soldiers for putting up a very good fight and giving Al-Shabaab a heavy blow, and what we would call like a bloody nose. And by evening yesterday, we were counting around 34 dead bodies of Al-Shabaab within the fighting ground. However, in the same attack, we lost four soldiers who died instantly during the improvised explosive device that was mounted on a vehicle that they used to break into our camp. There are a lot of conflicting reports around from different media houses, but this is simply propaganda put out by Al-Shabaab, and if you follow very well, their propaganda of the numbers killed on the side of UPDF was done right as the attack started, and this gives you a clear message that they are just doing propaganda. But at the moment, we are treating our injured soldiers who were airlifted by UN helicopters from the field, and they are now being treated at level 2 hospital at our base in Mogadishu.
You say that these attacks are usually during the festive seasons. Was there laxity on the part of UPDF to guard against such attacks this time?
There was no laxity at all. We had enough intelligence. Our forces had enough intelligence about the impending attack. And that's why you see that they managed to actually win the battle. The number of Al-Shabaab killed, the equipment captured, including those rocket-propelled grenades, bombs, and an assortment of weapons, AK-47, is a sign that they were ready for that battle and they were awake. In Somalia, there is no time for one to sleep. You doze off, you're gone. So our soldiers are under strict instructions. They are under strict command to make sure that they are always attentive at their place of work. And that's why they have done quite a good job on Al-Shabaab this time round.
How many bases were these that Al-Shabaab targeted?
Al-Shabaab targeted three of our bases, a base in Koryole, a base in Gorwain, and a base in Blumaler. These are bases based in the Lower Shabelle of Somalia, and that's where their target was. Some years back, they used to target the bases in Mogadishu, but since we fortified our security and security is improving in Mogadishu, they are not able to have this chance, because this time round they attacked over 130 kilometers outside of Mogadishu. Another camp is about 34 kilometers outside of Mogadishu.
We now turn to Malawi, where pressure continues to mount on Finance Minister Goodall Godwi to resign over allegations of fraudulently allocating money to pro-government parliamentarians. He's accused of disbursing about $6 million to 86 MPs who supported the government to oppose the electoral reform bill during previous sitting of the parliament. But Godwi says there was nothing wrong with the allocation. Lamek Masena reports from Blantyre.
Civil society organizations, or CSOs, started to call for Gondo's resignation early this month after a local newspaper reported on the allocations. They say they are concerned with the lack of transparency which has surrounded the whole issue. The pressure mounted when some opposition MPs withdrew from the list of beneficiaries after the CSOs accused them of being among those accepting bribes. The CSOs recently met with Gondwe, but say he failed to clarify the source and use of funds. Charles Gajoloweka is one of the CSO leaders pushing for Gondwe's resignation.
There is really nothing new that we got from the Minister of Finance, and our conviction is that what has been the public domain is exactly what we also got from the minister.
Normally, in Malawi, the government can persuade the head of the parliament to allot funds through a transparent budgetary process. It is not considered to be constitutional for the money to be given by the cabinet minister. Gondwe said the money came from taxes, grants and borrowing, and was saved from the readjustments of the 2017-2018 budget that saw cuts to the development budget. Earlier, he said the money will not be given directly to the members of parliament, but would go to individual projects in various constituencies. He said the funds will be channeled through local government authorities in their respective constituencies. Gajoloweka says during their latest meeting, Gondwe changed tune.
But when we met the minister, we were informed that it is no longer going to be the Ministry of Local Government then channeling these resources to district councils, but rather that this money will be centrally managed by the government, and we do not know up to now which ministry and what central government structure.
The NGOs suspect that the money given to the selected MPs is a way of appeasing those who voted against the electoral reforms bill during last sitting of parliament. The bribes were aimed at a package of constitutional reforms which were not passed that would have changed the electoral laws. They proposed a 50-plus-1 system which requires a presidential candidate to gain more than half of the vote. Current president just needs highest number of votes. The new laws would mandate runoffs if none of the candidates gets more than half of the total vote. Gondwe told local radio this week that he will not resign because he has done nothing wrong.
Unless they prove that we acted illegally, there's no point in my resigning. And they failed to prove that we acted illegally.
Gondwe says he believes the call for his resignation is politically motivated.
Yeah, they are being influenced by the political people. There was no doubt about that. So if the politicians want that, let's meet in parliament.
Opposition political parties are calling for authorities to call for an emergency sitting of parliament to discuss the matter. Leonard Menges is the spokesperson for Malawi Parliament. He says the call is not viable.
The meeting of parliament has a cost. And then we have also to know that parliament will be meeting as early May for the budget. And I don't see how an emergency meeting can be held now. And then they are also called for parliament.
Meanwhile, civil society organizations plan demonstrations on April 27 should Gondwe fail to resign. State House spokesman Ngeme Galilani told a local daily recently that he found the call for the Minister of Finance to resign or get fired on the basis of the project funds allocations completely ridiculous. In the meantime, the government has also offered to take the allocated money and offer a portion to all MPs. Several opposition MPs have said they want no part of it. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blanta.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Winnie Mandela by Caroline Davis. We have been listening to Caroline Davis with the song Winnie Mandela. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being here. I would like to hear what you think about this show. You can email us at southsudan@voanews.com. You can also reach us on Facebook. Our Facebook name is South Sudan in Focus. We hope you join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.